This is Sound Effects, a radio playground, a compendium of radio theater, comedy, and the audio arts, with your host, Jerry Stearns. Good evening, I'm Jerry Stearns, and tonight on Sound Effects, we're going to delve into programming appropriate to the scary season, which we seem to be pretty well into now. I have the beginning of a longer dark project that will start about a quarter after the top of the hour, and we'll have to continue and finish that one next week. But we'll start off tonight with an appropriate program. This is from a series called Tales from the Crypt. Now, this is the audio version of that series, not the television version, of course. Though they both were made by the Sci-Fi Channel. The radio version was produced by Brian Smith, who, despite the darkness of these programs, I knew him because he liked bubblegum malts for some reason. This tale from the crypt is about a fellow who is trying not to go back to either his boring teaching job or to prison. Perhaps they'll tell you why he's in prison. But the universe seems to be conspiring to make it very difficult for him to get away. You'll find out about that. The program is from Tales from the Crypt by the Seeing Ear Theater, and it's called Carrion Death.
Good morning, students. Here are the announcements. Today's hot lunch is French toast sticks.
Not another sucky lunch.
Jeb, how many times have I told you no talking during the announcements?
There's a yearbook staff meeting after school in Mr. Smith's room.
Freaking geeks.
Shut up.
Did you hear that? Shut up. You can't be saying shut up to no kid.
Jeb, you're right. Kindly shut up.
Teachers, please dismiss members of the baseball team at the start of sixth period for the game against Central.
Throughout the entire novel, we see Huck struggling with his decision to help Jim, a runaway slave. Finally, in chapter 31, he makes up his mind. Listen to this. I was a-trembling, because I'd got to decide forever betwixt two things, and I knowed it. I studied for a minute, sort of holding my breath, and then says to myself, all right then, I'll go to hell.
Mr. Wall? Excuse me, Mr. Wall?
Yes, Doris?
I think I read the wrong, thing, because I took down some guy named Sam Clemens, but you keep talking about this Mark Twain.
Frailty, thy name is woman. Doris, who do you suppose is buried in Grant's tomb?
I don't get it.
You wanted to see me, Tony?
Yes, Leonard. Sit down. I've had complaints from several parents about your attitude towards the students. I'm sure it's nothing, but I...
Jeb, do you see this book? It's called a thesaurus. Thesaurus. It just so happens that you have an entry in it. Would you like to hear it?
Thesaurus? What's that, some kind of frickin' dinosaur?
Here it is. Stupid. Obtuse. Dense. Thick. Backward, retarded, feeble-minded, moronic, cretinous, deficient, wanting...
Well, at least I ain't no frickin' lame-ass teacher.
Against stupidity, the very gods themselves contend in vain. And what the hell are you going to do, Professor?
I haven't decided. I suppose that if the school board terminates my contract, I may have to pursue another line of work.
Like what? You ain't exactly qualified for a whole lot else besides talking.
Actually, I have an idea that could be quite lucrative. Riches cover a multitude of woes. And my plan involves you, Cousin Dooley. Have another drink. Have you ever noticed the armored car that stops at the Capitol Bank?
Don't shoot.
And keep your hands over your head. Very good. You got the money, cuz?
I ain't no kid of yours.
How'd you know I was gonna stop here?
Intellect is invisible to the man who has none. That's Schopenhauer, in case you're one. You shot him! You idiot, what were you thinking?
You had to go showing off, didn't you? Schopenhauer, my ass. Everyone knows you, Professor, the way you talk. Why didn't you just give him your phone number while you were at it? Come on, let's get the hell out of here.
Okay, I'll bring them right out. Morning, Professor. Hot day for a ride.
Buenos dias, Miguel. Can I bring my book? It's 3 hours to Fort David.
Let's see. Much ado about nothing. I don't see where Shakespeare is going to do any harm. So, time for the bracelet.
Cuff my left hand, would you? Then I can hold the book in my right.
So, let's get the war. Damn it, the war. What's going on here? Wake up. The car is waiting. The war. Ghoulie, the war. Get up. Get up, you. Get up.
Hey, wait, wait. I gotta take a whiz.
Good morning, Ghoulie. Looks like we're joined at the wrist again.
Hey. How come you always cuff my right and his left? It's not fair.
Oh, I don't want to hear it, Devore. Let's go. Your ride is waiting.
Deputy Jerry Benson, reporting for transport duty, sir.
You've been watching too many movies, kid. This is in West Point, and my name is Miguel. You're not alone, are you?
Well, yes, sir. Warden says because of the cutback, he can only spare one deputy for transport duty, so I volunteered, Miguel.
Who is this guy? Barney Fife? Hey, Barney, tell me, did Andy remember to give you a bullet for your gun?
Pleased to meet you, Deputy Benson. I'd offer to shake your hand, but you might come in contact with Cousin Ghoulie here. He's kind of hard to wipe off once you get him on you. As the bard says, they that touch pitch will be defiled.
The bard, eh?
Professor says a lot of strange stuff. It's because he's crazy. Only nobody knows it but me.
You like Elvis, huh?
I beg your pardon?
Elvis, you know.
I'm afraid I don't know what you're talking about, Deputy Benson.
Ah, call me Jerry. You know, the king. You were just whistling his song. It's now or never. You know what I'm talking about.
What I was whistling, Jerry, was O Sole Mio. It was an art song written in Naples, Italy in 1898.
Really? What's that mean? O Sole what-o?
Mio. It means my own son. A man is singing to his lover. The son, my own son. It's in your face. It's in your face.
Yeah, well, Elvis wrote better lyrics. Hey, what is that you're reading there?
Much Ado About Nothing. Shakespeare.
Shakespeare. Woo! You must be smart. That's why they call you Professor, eh? Mm-hmm.
Jerry, I'm sitting here handcuffed to a convict with the personality of a Wolverine, and I'm on my way to court to pick up 2 consecutive life sentences. How smart could I be?
Wow. What did you do to deserve 2 life sentences?
I let Ghoulie carry the gun.
Huh?
What? You're talking about me, Professor?
Always. He used it on an armored car driver. It seems that if your accomplice commits a murder while you're in the middle of a robbery, you both can be convicted for it.
Oh, man, look what we got here.
What's going on, Jerry?
Looks like the flash floods last week washed the damn road out up here.
You can never trust the desert.
I guess I could go back and pick up the interstate at exit 12.
40 miles out of your way? Do you have a map up there?
Damn straight, got one right here.
Well, what about the county road? I believe it's 231. It catches the pass just south of here.
Hey, newsflash. I still gotta take a whiz, Barney, and pretty damn soon.
Let's see. Yeah, I see it. Got it right here. 231, go through Lahara.
I bet they got toilets there.
It's hard to believe, Jerry, but Ghoulie and I are related.
He ain't no kid of mine.
Ghoulie is my late wife's cousin. I've known him since he was 7. Looking at him now, you wouldn't guess that he was such a sweet boy.
You wouldn't know sweet if it bit you in the ass, Professor.
Hemingway once said that all things truly wicked start from an innocence.
It was your plan, Professor. More like a fairy tale. An afternoon's work, Ghoulie says to me. Low risk. Big pay. Only he couldn't do the thing by himself.
Alas.
Wait a minute. You two are the desert dogs. Aren't you? I read about you guys. You held up that Brinks truck and then disappeared into the desert for, what was it, 2 weeks?
18 days in the sunny heart of hell, Barney.
Wasn't it around here someplace that they caught you?
King Flats, half an hour south.
What was it you boys got? 5 million?
More like 6.
And they never found any of them.
No. They never did.
Hey, ready, Mart. They're on the left. Hey, are you gonna stop or what? Because if you're not, I'm gonna let go right now and you can mop up the puddle.
Okay, I'm stopping. All right, you two, I'm gonna get out and look things over.
Hey, I can see him through the store window. He's arguing with the attendant.
Let us be thankful for fools. But for them, the rest of us could not succeed. This could be our break, Ghoulie.
What do you mean, break? More like another one of your fairy tales. Whoa, hey, here he comes.
Listen to me. If I see any chance at all, I am going to take...
Come on, man. Let's get this over with.
Whoosh. It's about time. This heap is about to become a flood zone. Hey, come on, Professor. I gotta go.
Wait, I dropped my book. Sorry, Jerry. It fell out of my pocket. Let me just...
What the...
Now, Ghoulie!
Get the goddamn gun! Hey, what are you waiting for? You got the gun! Waste him! Waste the son of a bitch!
We need keys, Ghoulie. Car keys. The handcuff key.
Oh, yeah.
Car keys. Keep looking.
You shot me.
That's right, Jerry. I shot you with your own gun. And you were worried about poor Ghoulie here.
You bastard! You crazy egghead!
What the hell?
Nothing in his life became him like the leaving it.
What did you do that for?
Because he questioned my sanity. And because you didn't think I would.
Who the hell is that shoot?
The attendant. He's coming out of the store. That is a shotgun. We've got to get to the car, Ghoulie.
I'm hit. Oh, sweet Jesus, I can't.
Where did he go? He must be reloading. The car! Come on! In you go! How the hell am I supposed to... Go! Come on. Where are you hit, Ghoulie? Where, Ghoulie?
Everywhere. Oh.
It's blood.
Yes, Cooley. There's quite a bit of blood, but just think about something else. How about a poem? John Donne seems appropriate at a time like this. No? Wait, I see you more as a romantic. We'll start with Wordsworth.
Leave me the hell alone.
The world is too much with us, late and soon. Getting and spending, we lay waste our powers. Little we see in nature that is ours. Oh, you seem to have suffered a setback, Ghoulie. The car is dead. But there's Bob's Feed and Garden Supply up ahead. Why don't we just stop in on Bob?
I can't.
Oh, there is no I anymore. It's we now. Do you understand? All right. Let's go. Come on. Come on. Good. All right. Hello? Anybody here?
Coming.
Oh, gotta sit down.
What? Don't shoot me, mister. I got my hands up. I'll empty the register.
It's not money that we need, son. Are you Bob?
There is no Bob. I'm Elbert.
Elbert? Well, Elbert, we need the keys to your car.
But I ain't got a car, mister. My mom dropped me off here this morning, just like always.
No. What a tangled web we weave. When first we practice to deceive. The next bullet will be all yours, Elbert.
No, don't. You go out back, look for yourself. There's no damn car, I swear.
I'm somewhat encumbered, as you can see. Bring me that wheelbarrow.
Sure.
All right, Cooley. In you go. Now then, Elbert, we'll need a hacksaw to get these handcuffs off.
Mister, we sell feed and grain, farm supplies. You want a shovel or 50 pounds of oats, I got you covered, but a hacksaw?
That's too bad. Well, then we'll take those cokes in your cooler and hats. The sun is like an evil eye out there.
We don't got no hats, mister.
You keep disappointing me, Elbert. To deal plainly, Elbert, I fear that I am not in my perfect mind. Do you understand?
Mister, I don't understand nothing. I just work here, okay? I live with my mom and I make $8.50 an hour and I ain't no hero.
Fair enough, Elbert, but please, don't disappoint me again. I'm going to give you an assignment now. I want you to step into this closet and count backwards from 1,000 out loud. You can do that, can't you, Elbert? Let me hear you.
1,000?
Mm-hmm.
999. Yeah. 998.
Very good. Now, when you're done, you may come out and go back to living your life of quiet desperation. But if you open that door before you get to zero, Elbert, I will kill you. Do you understand?
Yes, mister. Thank you, mister.
Don't mention it, Elbert. Into the closet, then.
1,999.
Mm-hmm.
998.
Louder, Elbert.
997.
Then?
996.
Mm-hmm.
990.
5, Elbert. 995. Now, pull yourself together, Ghoulie. We have some shopping to do. Definitely an owl, Ghoulie. A clamorous owl that nightly hoots and wonders at our quaint spirits. Quaint. This is rather a quaint situation we find ourselves in, don't you think? The desert dogs, handcuffed together, back wandering our favorite part of the desert. Wouldn't you say that was quaint, Ghoulie? No, I guess you wouldn't. I don't suppose you want a Coke. You know, You're not exactly holding up your end of the conversation, Cousin Gooley. I mean, I realize you're laboring under a certain handicap, but still. What's my plan, you ask? What do I intend to do next? How will I resolve this quaint situation? That's a good question, Gooley. I'll just open a Coke for myself while I ponder it, if you don't mind. Oh, my. The last one. We've been a thirsty lot, haven't we? Warm as blood. All right. Taking the long view. I would have to say that the plan is to recover the money and leave the country. Yeah. I have in mind a nice chateau on the Côte d'Azur, say in Antibes, which is handy to con, or a villa on some Greek island in the Aegean where I could look out onto Homer's wine-dark sea. I suppose for the money's sake, I might have to settle for something in the Caymans. You notice the theme here, Gooley. All these places are on the water, the cool, cool water. What's that, Gooley? You don't want the money anymore? It's all mine now? I can have your share to make up for all this trouble you're causing me? Why, that is very generous of you. I'm touched. Well, it would seem that this desert is not exactly deserted. There must be a veritable menagerie out there, lurking in the dark. I believe that they're waiting for you. Your fan club. Go away! Get! If you don't mind, I'm going to wheel you over to the other side of the fire, Gooley. It is hard to get comfortable when you're handcuffed to a man in a wheelbarrow. I would really like to get comfortable, Gooley. I'm not feeling very well, and I need to sleep. You tired me out today, and tomorrow, well, I'd guess it must be at least 20 miles to the spring, 20 miles away from $6 million. Yes, it was hot, wasn't it? The sun was truly a punishment. You know, Gooley, I don't think the heat is your friend. You're getting a little ripe. Oh, which brings me back to the plan. In the short term, you see, I need to find a way to get free of you. Yeah, that's right. I'm breaking up the old desert dogs. It's not that I don't appreciate your company, Gooley, but you've become something of a dead weight, so to speak. I believe it was Kipling who said, "He travels fastest who travels alone." I have no idea how I'm going to get these handcuffs off. Let's sleep on it. What do you say? Good. Sleep that knits up the raveled sleeve of care. Or is it unraveled? I must be tired. Well, good night to you too, Gooley. Don't worry. It'll be a hard day, but by tomorrow night, we'll be sleeping at the spring. With the water and the money. What? No. Oh. Goddamn buzzards. Hey, you two, hey! Get away from him. Oh, no, Gooley. They got your eyes. You should have said something. What are you standing there for? Go, get out! The restaurant is closed!
Why, you... I said go! Fly away, you bastards! Leave us alone! Now, how did it get so hot so quickly? We need to find you some shade, Ghoulie. You're starting to swell up.
Ripeness is all.
What? Who's there? I've got a gun. I've got to get out of the sun, Ghoulie. It's like someone's pounding a nail into my head. And these buzzards are just standing here like lords of the land watching us.
What's the matter, mister? Would you rather he said nevermore?
You crack me up!
Oh my God, it's the buzzards that they're talking. What is this? What are you?
We're turkey vultures, if you must know.
A.K.A. carrion crow or red-necked buzzards.
Not good. Talking vultures, not good at all. This is a very bad sign, Ghoulie.
Oh, we can tell you're losing it, mister. You missed one of the most famous quotes in all of Shakespeare.
King Lear, Act 5, Scene 2. Gloucester goes, "No further, sir. A man may rot even here."
Rot even here? He says rot even here?
Damn straight. So Edgar goes, "What? In ill thoughts again? Men must endure their going hence even as they're coming hither. Ripeness is all."
Come on, Ghoulie. We're getting out of here.
Hey, mister, you going hence or hither?
Leave me alone. Leave me. Ah, damn. I'm sorry, Ghoulie. Here. Get back in the wheelbarrow. God, what happened to your feet?
Coyotes must have nibbled on them last night.
Coyotes are tricky, Professor. Never trust a critter that comes out only at night.
Now you take turkey vultures.
Yeah.
We're honest-to-God birds. We do our business in broad daylight where everyone can see.
Damn straight. No secrets with a turkey vulture.
Stop it. I'm leaving. Do you hear? You don't exist. They don't exist, Ghoulie. I'm imagining them.
Your imagination ain't that good, mister.
We are going on, Ghoulie. Forging ahead. Make haste. The better foot before. Are they following us? No. Good. Right. We keep the mountains to the left and walk due east. We should be at the spring in a couple of hours. If I can just get through this day, Ghoulie, I'll be a millionaire. Where is it? There's nothing here but ants. Wait. There's the pink rock that looks like a duck. And here's the saguaro with his hands up. So where is it? It was here. Right here. Don't you remember, Ghoulie? We camped here for 3 or 4 days, and there was water the whole time. The ants. What do you mean? Ants can't drink up an entire spring. What? What are you trying to tell me? You're not making any sense. Where is all the water?
Nature, the world, or less.
You little vermin! You better move. You better get the hell out of here. You hear me? Listen to me, Ghoulie. Arguing with ants. Oh, I have got to sit down. Oh, damn it. Oh. Sorry about that, Ghoulie.
The conclusion of this tale from the crypt and more after this break.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, KFAI, 90.3 FM Minneapolis, Radio Without Boundaries.
Things are jumping. You're on sound effects, a radio playground on KFAI Community Radio. Hi, welcome back. I'm Jerry Stearns, and tonight on Sound Effects, a Radio Playground, we're listening to Carrion Death. You see, Professor Wall is handcuffed to a former authority figure, now deceased, and he's dragging him through the desert, trying to make sure that he does not return to his dull English teaching job or to prison. Yes, it's a wonderful tale for this time of year. It's a tale from the crypt. Let's go back to Carrion Death.
There's nothing wrong with me that a tall glass of iced tea wouldn't fix. Yes, and a beer for you.
Howdy, Professor. How's your imagination this afternoon?
Failing.
Where's all that money, mister?
Over there. Buried near the pink rock that looks like a duck.
Well, aren't you gonna dig it up?
I'm resting. Later.
Hey, how come you stomped all these poor little girls? It's okay, girls. He ain't gonna hurt you no more.
I'm thirsty.
They was just trying to tell you something.
I'm hot and I'm thirsty. The spring dried up. That's all that's happening here.
It's a goddamn global warming, don't you know? Okay, girls, who wants to step up? Go on and have your say.
In short, I maintain that all great men, or even men a little out of the common, that is to say, capable of giving some new word, must from their very nature be criminals. More or less, of course. Otherwise, it's hard for them to get out of the common rut. And to remain in the common rut is what they can't submit to, from their very nature again. And to my mind, they ought not, indeed, to submit to it. The common people preserve and populate the world. The extraordinary move the world and lead it to its goal.
Well, Professor?
I should know that. I know it. I just can't think anymore.
I'll give you a hint. It's a Russian.
But not a commie. From a book called Something and Something.
But not War and Peace.
Sorry. Your time is up, Professor Raskolnikov. And the answer is...
Crime and punishment.
Damn straight. That's crime.
And punishment.
Is that what this is about, then? You want me to repent my sins? Express remorse? Make amends to the ants?
It ain't only the ants, mister.
Who are you to judge me? How many illiterate misreadings of the scarlet letter have you slogged through? How many greasy French toast sticks have you eaten while you stood cafeteria watch? How many cracker moms have cursed you for giving their little linebackers a well-deserved F in freshman comp? And all for $24,000 a year.
That makes you a great man, Professor? So extraordinary you can move the world and lead it to its goal? Is that why you're always quoting from books you never wrote?
Maybe there are no great men anymore. Maybe there are only accountants and lawyers and programmers and...
English teachers?
You probably think that the ants ain't real. That's okay, girls. You go now. Come back after we're done messing with him.
Well, according to you, we're imaginary, too.
That means you're here all by yourself, mister.
So who are you talking to, Professor?
What is this? What do you want with me?
Just now, nothing much. But later today, or maybe tomorrow.
Your eyes. Maybe some tongue.
No.
I'm partial to the liver myself, but for that, we'll have to wait for the coyotes to open you up.
Sometimes they get greedy, but seeing as how there are two of you, boy...
I don't trust them.
No, I never have.
You're saying I'm going to die?
Well, yeah.
We thought you knew. I mean, here you are in the middle of the desert, handcuffed to a dead man in a wheelbarrow, and the weatherman is predicting a high of 102, maybe more.
It ain't all that bad. Death, I mean. Don't you remember your Emily Dickinson? Because I could not stop for death, he kindly stopped for me. The carriage held but just ourselves.
and immortality. Think of it, Professor. Immortality.
There is no immortality. That's just a lie the morons tell themselves.
That's okay. I don't see no characters anyways.
Wheelbarrows, then.
But I can't die. I wasn't shot. I'm not sick.
I've seen this lots of times, mister, and you got all the symptoms.
Symptoms? Symptoms of what?
Let's see. Very high temperature. Hot. Dry red skin.
Check.
So I've been out in the sun.
Deep breathing and fast pulse, then shallow breathing and weak pulse.
Yep.
Dilated pupils.
Look over here, mister.
Get away from me.
Yeah, oh yeah, they're like black dimes. Confusion, delirium, hallucinations.
What? What's so funny?
Next, you got your convulsions, then your loss of consciousness.
Face it, you got heat stroke, Professor.
The sun, it's in your face. Oh, solo mio.
No, this isn't happening.
Stam fronte.
I am not going to die here.
Oh, solo mio.
Ghouli, tell them the plan. As soon as I feel better, I'm going to dig up the money. Then I'm going to retire to the south of France and drink champagne and lie on the beach and...
Mister, unless a helicopter drops out of the sky in the next 10 minutes and rushes you to a hospital, you're pretty much cooked.
All right. All right, then let it end. To die. To sleep no more, and by a sleep to say we end the heartache and the thousand natural shocks that flesh is heir to, 'tis a consummation devoutly to be wished.
Only you forgot the next line, mister. For in that sleep of death, what dreams may come?
No, no dreams. Death is the end.
You sure about that?
Listen. What's that? Here! Ghouli! Ghouli! I can't get up. Wave at them for me. They've got to see us.
They see you, all right.
What did I say? What did I say? I told you I wasn't going to die here.
They're coming in.
What's happening?
I don't believe this.
Come on! Over here! Hey! Hey, help me! Help!
How the hell did the coyotes get a helicopter?
Every dog has his day.
I told you, can't trust them.
Damn straight. Hey, you guys are supposed to be nocturnal. That means you only work the night shift.
Special circumstances.
Not to mention time and a half.
This doesn't make any sense. You've got paws. You can't fly a helicopter.
So he's pretty far gone, then.
He must be, if you're here.
Confused.
Delirious.
Hallucinating.
Coyote child.
No, you don't understand.
So, I could rip his throat out.
That would shut him up.
All right. I'll show you where the money is hidden. We'll split it. No, you can have it all. To Jerry. Albert, listen, I'm sorry I shot you.
There's no Jerry here, Professor. It's just the scavengers.
No. No! Ghouli! Help!
Help yourself, Professor. I've got problems of my own. See how you like being dead. Professor?
Mr. Kurtz? He dead.
It's over then?
Oh, no. It goes on and on and on.
World without end.
I'm man.
Ghouli? What's happening? Ghouli!
He hath awakened from the dream of life.
Oh, that's good. Who is that, Keats?
Shelley, actually.
Let's eat!
Tales from the Crypt, Carrion Death was written by James Patrick Kelly, adapted from the story in the EC comic book Shock Suspense Stories, originally published by William M. Gaines. Carrie and Death starred Campbell Scott as Wall and featured Todd Cummings as DeVore, John Kolvenbach as Jerry, Kevin Townley as Albert, Raphael Ferrer as the Warden, Peter Francis James as Miguel, Sarah Provost as Doris, and John Kassir as the Crypt Keeper. Carrie and Death was produced and directed by Brian Smith. Associate producer Larissa James. Sound design by John Colucci. Additional Crypt Keeper material by Jack Wohl. Tales from the Crypt series theme composed by Danny Elfman, with lyrics by Jack Wohl. Theme arranged and performed by Ohad Talmor. Series story editor Tony Daniel. Series announcer Alyssa Honeycutt. Executive producers Jack Wohl, Brian Smith, Richard Donner, David Giler, Walter Hill, Joel Silver, and Robert Zemeckis. This has been a production of Sci-Fi.com's Seeing Ear Theater.
The crypt is closed.
Yeah, yes, yes, Ms. Dim Glimmer. I'll put them in the mail today. Merry Christmas.
Did I hear you say Merry Christmas, Mutt? Well, we ain't even finished with Halloween.
Yeah, I know, but old Miss Dim Glimmer likes to get a good head up on her present buying.
Oh, what's she giving this year?
Oh, same old stuff. Cold or hot, snow globes, a couple of sets of mismatched spangled spam can low-dangling earrings, a dachshund-shaped bread box for French loaves, oh, and a dozen or so pig-themed wind chimes. Oh,
yes, she do love the sounds of pigs tinkling in the wind,
doesn't
don't
everybody?
She?
Whoa, you guys!
Oh, hey, boys.
Oh, come on, fellas.
Give us our scary party goodies.
Yeah, for the haunted church satanic sacrifice and potluck.
You got that right, but yeah. I'm coming to get you.
Oh, yeah. Hey, don't he look just like a clueless Cluck Clanner in that sheet?
Well, he would if he just cut some eye holes in the thing.
If you broke it, you bought it.
Oh, no such luck, Mutt. He just knocked over a stack of war surplus crash boxes.
Come on, boys. Help me up, and we'll get down to business.
Here you go.
Now, Mutt, we need 10 gross each of boot paste, ugly wugglies, finger traps, and gliding eyeballs.
Gross. Okay, I'll get them.
And while you're up on the ladder, Smut, pull down some moaning prickle balls, whodunit puzzles, and bloody squirt fish.
Oh, the kids loved those last year.
Yeah, they're behind the prehistoric pail pack. Rainbow coils and doodlers there, Smut.
Don't I know
well,
that?
Well, I'm just trying
to
help.
Well, then we want 100 gory goodie bags filled with crippled flip frogs, devaluated dollar balls, and radium glow yos.
Well, I got those right here. Oh, this is going to be some horrific party, boys.
Oh, and don't forget the neon knockers in slime, the wicky-wacky sticker faces, some small stretch men, and those go-go rings.
And 12 packs of serial killer candy cards and finger guillotines for door prizes.
We'll be back in a half hour to pick everything up, okay?
Because right now we got to go toilet paper some trees and tip over some outhouses.
See you at the service, Paul.
So long, you troublemakers. Don't you just love a sacrifice, Sam?
Yeah, we're going to make us a devil of a prophet.
That was Mutt and Smut's Scary Sale from the Fire Sign Theater album, All Things Fire Sign. Now we have the beginning of another story that we'll finish off next week. This is called The Sting of the Dark Tower. See, the writer C.S. Lewis is invited to a laboratory at Cambridge University where he's shown a device called a chronoscope. Now, the chronoscope does to time what a telescope does to space. So he's looking through the chronoscope, and there's an accident with the machine, and some things get switched through time. So let's find out the beginning of The Sting of the Dark Tower.
The Sting of the Dark Tower by Peter Grunbaum, inspired by a story that was probably written by C.S. Lewis.
When the writer C.S. Lewis died, his family began to burn all of the writing he left behind.
Fortunately, several boxes were rescued, and in them was an unfinished novel about a dystopian society in a parallel universe. Because he never finished the story, no one would ever know what happened in the strange world he described. No one would know until now.
The sort of time travel you read about in books, time travel of the body, is absolutely impossible.
I myself have traveled into the future.
We've seen this many times. The first man is doing some kind of ritual.
We need to switch them back before this one grows a stinger.
What we can see in these images frightens
me. I shudder to think about it.
Great. They gave you a key.
Well, I wouldn't have had to use it if you had answered the doorbell or picked up the phone or read my texts or responded to my knocking. So, I'm Eleanor.
I know.
And you're Juniper, right? I just want to be sure I'm in the right house.
The key worked, didn't it?
I like your couch. May I sit down? I know this is awkward.
You know, most 15-year-olds don't need a nanny.
You're not like most 15-year-olds, are you? So I hear you like C.S. Lewis.
I'm reading everything he wrote, if that's what you mean.
That's one of the things that excited me most about this job. The Narnia books were my favorite when I was little.
You know what I can't stand? When people think they know C.S. Lewis when all they've read are his children's books.
I've also read the Space Trilogy and the Screwtape Letters. Does that satisfy you, June?
My name is Juniper.
Well, and I've also read... Hold on, it's in my bag somewhere. This.
What's that?
The Dark Tower and Other Stories by C.S. Lewis. It was published after his death. Hardly anyone has heard of it.
Let me see it.
No.
Why not?
Well, for one thing, if you want something, you should ask nicely for it.
Didn't my parents explain this to you? I don't do nice.
They did explain it, but I want to make up my own mind on the subject.
Fine. May I please have a look at it?
No.
What is it you want me to say?
There's nothing I want you to say. I just have an idea. I think I should read it to you.
What am I, 5 years old?
You know, before there was television, people read stories to each other. They listened while posing for paintings or working in a factory or just for fun in the evenings. It's what C.S. Lewis would have experienced at your age.
Fine. Go ahead, read.
Turn off the music, please. Thank you. But before I start, there's something you should know.
If you're gonna read, read.
All right, then. The Dark Tower by C.S. Lewis. Of course, said Orpheus, the sort of time travel you read about in books, time travel of the body, is absolutely impossible.
Time travel of the body? As opposed to what? Time travel of the soul?
If I'm going to do this, I insist on no interruptions. Is that understood?
Just read, okay?
Of course, said Orpheus.
The sort of time travel you read about in books, time travel of the body, is absolutely impossible.
You haven't changed a bit, Orpheus. I'm so delighted to finally get an invitation to your Cambridge lab. Well then, enlighten me. Is there another kind of time travel that does not involve the body?
I'll explain in a moment, my dear Lewis. But consider... If I sent you 100 years into the future, what would happen to the material that existed where you appeared? Even if there were just air in that space, those molecules of air would be distributed in the space between your own molecules and kill you instantly.
I see your point, Professor.
You cannot send a man through time any more than you can instantly send him through space. It's simply impossible.
No, I must correct you on that point. I myself have traveled into the future.
Oh, in your imagination, perhaps?
Not at all, Orpheus. I mean it quite literally. I regularly travel into the future at a remarkable speed of 60 minutes per hour.
Ah, 60 minutes per hour. That's very good.
Scudamore, I didn't see you come in.
I heard you had a guest, so I was just rounding up some tea.
Scudamore, let me introduce you to Professor C.S. Lewis. Lewis, this is my assistant, Michael Scudamore.
An honor to meet you, sir.
Scudamore's come all the way from Columbia University in New York, Lewis, And listen to this. He knows the entire periodic table of the elements by heart.
Impressive.
And yet, he can't seem to remember that I take sugar with my tea.
It's right there, sir.
It is?
Right there by the cream.
This?
No, that's the cream. It's right next to it.
Oh, yes. Thank you.
Now, Orfeo, what's this about another form of time travel?
Yes, of course. As I was saying, you cannot instantaneously transport something through space or time. But even though you can't move something instantly through space, you can use a device to make it instantly appear closer than it actually is.
You mean a telescope?
Precisely. Now, do you recall the paper I published on the substance used in human memory?
Yes, you sent me a reprint. It had a very long name, starting with zinc, I recall.
That's right, Professor Lewis. Around here we call it Substance Z.
I discovered that Substance Z could be synthesized into crystals about the size of a shilling. In this form, it is translucent. Yet, if you run an electric current through it, it becomes quite transparent, except that light that passes through it becomes modified.
Modified? How?
Scudamore polished one of the crystals into a lens so that the light formed an image. It was an image of a room, but not the room we were in.
You're beginning to lose me, Orfeo. What does this have to do with time travel?
The brain uses Substance Z to see what's happened in the past. We've used it to build what I call a chronoscope. It does to time what a telescope does to space.
That's quite a claim, Orfeo. May I see this chronoscope?
But of course. It's right on that table over there. Scudamore, will you do the honors?
Certainly, sir. Let me show you how it works. There's a light bulb here, which sends light through the lens made from Substance Z here. Alternating current runs through the lens from here to here. The image from the lens is projected onto that screen on the wall, and this fan keeps everything cool so the lens won't overheat and shatter.
You can see into the past with this.
Perhaps the past, or perhaps the future.
The future? Don't be absurd. Next, you'll be telling me you've seen who wins the boat race tomorrow.
Cambridge will leave Oxford in the dust. But I don't need a chronoscope to tell me that.
I guess I walked into that.
Yes, only an Oxford man could.
But seriously, Orfeo, you know this is impossible. What happens if I see myself in a blue tie tomorrow, and then I choose to wear a red one instead?
We can't use it to see tomorrow. I suspect we are looking at several thousand years into the future, or possibly the past. There's no way to know.
Will you turn it on for me?
Well, you see, sir...
Is there a problem?
I'm afraid the shape of my lens is not that precise. The images are quite blurry. The astronomy department is making a better one. It was supposed to be ready in time for your visit, but it won't be ready until tomorrow.
Turn it on, gentlemen.
Dr. Orfeo?
Yes, turn it on, Scudamore. Otherwise, he will think we are charlatans.
So, we start with the fan. Add electricity through the lens, and finally add the light.
I see something.
Draw the curtains, Scudamore.
Ah, yes. It's a room. And that's a man over there, I think.
Yes, and another one seated in the shadows.
If you say so.
We've seen this many times. The first man is doing some kind of ritual. He kneels and prostrates himself before something. We can't tell what.
And then, watch.
See? The man from the shadows comes up from behind.
The first man seems unaware.
Yes, and when he starts to stand up, the second man grabs him from behind.
What in heaven's name?
It's very difficult to tell what's happening.
I swear, he touched his forehead to the back of the first man's neck, and the man fainted.
He'll recover in a moment. There, see?
And now, is he leaving?
Yes, and in a few minutes, there'll be another one. And on and on.
You can turn the machine off now, Scudamore.
I say, Orfeo, this wouldn't be an elaborate prank on an Oxford man, would it?
Oh, my dear Lewis, I sometimes wish it were. What we can see in these images frightens me. That's why I asked you to witness it. We need to understand what we have here, and your imaginative and open mind is the only one I trust. Until we have a better understanding, we mustn't tell anyone about it. Can you imagine what the newspapers would say?
I shudder to think about it. Orfeo, I must return to Oxford now and give all of this some thought. May I come back tomorrow?
Absolutely. Scudamore, please see Professor Lewis out.
Of course, sir.
Tell me, how is Orfeo doing?
I take it you noticed, then.
Noticed?
His eyesight. His mind is as sharp as ever, but his vision grows worse every day.
Is there anything to be done?
He won't even admit it's a problem. But I have to describe everything that the chronoscope shows. Perhaps it'll be better with the new lens, but I doubt it. But to be honest, Professor Lewis, I will find it hard to concentrate on my work tomorrow.
How so?
My fiancée is coming tomorrow evening. She's here for the whole month.
Sounds wonderful, Mr. Scudamore.
Please, call me Michael. Camilla's coming on the evening train after flying in from New York.
Lovely name. Where does she stay?
With me at my flat.
With you? Does the girl know about this arrangement?
She insisted on it.
Oh, dear.
It's not as if we have much money to spare for a hotel room for her.
And how much is a girl's reputation worth? What will people say? Oh,
Camilla doesn't think much about what other people say.
Oh, dear, oh, dear. I'll see you around 11 o'clock tomorrow, then.
I can walk you to the station.
No. I can find my way from here.
As he leaves, I will tell you that was part one of The Sting of the Dark Tower by C.S. Lewis. We'll have the rest of that story, the conclusion, next week, here on Sound Effects, a Radio Playground. I hope you join us for the conclusion of that story, and in subsequent Sundays for more modern audio theater. I'm Jerry Stearns. You have been listening to Sound Effects, a Radio Playground, modern audio theater on the radio. Stick around for Abby's Room for One. It's his music until midnight. Sound Effects, a Radio Playground, the best in audio theater, comedy, and the audio arts. A medium where almost everything is left to your imagination.
Support for KFAI comes from the Cedar Cultural Center, presenting Patchy Man and Mind Sign, Saturday, October 18th. Patchy Man takes to the Cedar with his latest release, Another Place.
An album that blends his dub reggae sound with elements of psychedelia, synth-pop, and post-punk. He shares the stage with synth-hip-hop prog-funk artist Mind Sign.
Opening the show is Stone's Throw label artist Nietzsche. More information about Patchy Man and Mind Sign can be found at thecedar.org.
Support for KFAI comes from First Avenue, presenting Jonathan Richman live on stage Thursday, October 16th. Singer-songwriter Jonathan Richman has come a long way since founding the proto-punk band Modern Lovers. But his songs have rippled through popular music, influencing some of the biggest names in pop and rock. He's touring with his latest release, Only Frozen Sky Anyway, and his appearance will feature Tommy Larkins on drums. More information about Jonathan Richman live at First Avenue is available at first-avenue.com.
In recognition of the freedom of speech protections on the First Amendment and the FCC's relaxed policy on late night and overnight language, this KFAI program may include song lyrics that some listeners might find objectionable. Listener discretion is advised.
You can't always get what you want, but you try sometimes. You get what you need.
You are listening to Fresh Air Community Radio, 90.3 FM Minneapolis, going out to the stratosphere, or on the